And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Today, let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
Yeah, unafeared, here on Declare, you're independent to me, Ernest Hancock, here in Phoenix, Arizona, from the BEA beautiful studios of Freedoms with an S, freedomsphoenix.com, Alessandro Fasilo from Italia. I always love talking to Alessandro because we know what's up. Let me give you a little bio and you'll see. Alessandro Fasilo is an attorney in Italy, Germany, and Spain. He's fluent in five languages. Due to his socialist indoctrination of European schools and universities, he joined Austrian economics and libertarian philosophy only in his mature years. As an attorney specialized in commercial and tax law, he often represents clients against the state and the banksters, faithful to the Jeffersonian principle that when law becomes injustice, resistance becomes duty. He always strives to undermine as much as possible the multiple laws whose only aim is to encroach freedom. All right. This is, I tell you right there in a nutshell, his attitude towards. But, you know, I got to ask a question before we get going here, Alessandro. Is, you know, in your mature years, you come the philosophy of leave me aloneism or whatever. Why? You know, what brought that on? And what were you, if you were to talk now to your previous self and go, man, get with the program, what the hell are you? What would you say to yourself? What was it that you were believing that needed to be undone or something? Help me out with that.
Well, I think this is very much connected to my job as an attorney. If you live the inner workings of the state, of the laws, of the judicial system, I think everywhere in the world, but maybe particularly in Italy, which is one of the worst countries as far as the workings of the state are concerned, I think you must grow unsatisfied with whatever is the so-called public sector. You feel that something is wrong, that the laws are crooked and they are just made to favor crony capitalists. You feel and you see day by day that the monopolist of decision-making, which is the state, by means of the police, the judicial system, is more and more expensive and furnishes a service which is worse and worse. And so you start thinking. I think if you are an attorney, sooner or later you have to come to the libertarian philosophy or to, yes, leave me aloneism or laissez-faire, whatever it is. Whatever is done by the public sector is bad, in a nutshell.
Okay, a lot of times people are going, yeah, well, at least the elite, got it okay and it's for them. I'm a rich attorney and I'll be the elite and screw everybody else. And you did not go down that route or that way of thinking because why? Was there a grandmother, a coach, an employer, or, a dad, an uncle, or something that kind of just wore on your soul enough that you went, nah, I'm not doing this. Why?
Well, maybe from a personal point of view, you can say I'm a natural rebel. I don't like it. I don't like that there's a monopolist of violence, of the use of force. Maybe, as you quite rightly noted, it was against my personal interests, but I'd rather be poor and free than rich and a slave.
Why? So that's my attitude. Why? See, it's a character thing.
Not only. I think personal freedom, individual freedom, is the most valuable achievement we can gain in our lives, and it is worth everything.
Okay, I keep asking this question. Why is that your opinion? You got a bunch of, I bet you, people that you work with, other attorneys, that is not, personal freedom is not the top of their list. They're like, you know, I got, you know, a nicer Tesla or something. I mean, I, you know, what is it that drives you to this opinion? I mean, I've met you, I know, you're a freedom guy. Is it biological? Was it in you? Or is it something that you were taught or your grandmother said something at some time? And, you know, after you answer that, I want to know when the shift was and how dramatic it was. Were you 43 and a half years old and all of a sudden you go, this is done? Or when the European Union started or some law was passed? I mean, something happened that flipped your switch. What was it?
Well, it was a long evolution. It started quite a long time ago. I had to do intensively with German public administrations, and there you see really the power of the state, and there it started. I started feeling about the injustice that lies behind public authorities, so-called. It was a long evolution, but then what triggered my interest in libertarian philosophy was the crisis in 2007, 2008. This drew me to reading about business cycles and Austrian economics, and from Austrian economics to libertarian philosophy, it's just a very short leap. And that's where I discovered authors like von Mises, Rothbard, Hans-Hermann Hoppe, who convinced me. And maybe you quite correctly ask, why is it? I think it's the logical beauty and the logical necessity of the freedom philosophy. You can't subscribe to anything else as far as the whole system of life is concerned. You need to subscribe to self-ownership and personal freedom. Otherwise, you always fall into some kind of contradiction, which I wouldn't accept on a personal basis.
Donna, get a package for Alessandro of one of the Pirates Without Borders books. And I want to select some bumper stickers and pens. We're going to get them all pirated up. Donna's going to send you an email, and you're going to please send her a mailing address. We can get some goodies to you. You're going to dig it the most, man. It's all Alessandro. Yeah, we started publishing a book on Amazon, Letters of Mark and all that stuff. And it's just, we're having fun with this, and it's for guys just like you. It's when you read, you know, Rothbard, or you start getting Austrian economics in there, and you start the morality of the individual and the corruption of the collective. And once that clicks and it aligns with something you already knew, a splinter in your mind, like the Matrix thing, all of a sudden it becomes, you know, which side you're on. But my question is, you know, we're going into the break here a little bit, and then we're going to find out all about European Union and Italy. And guy, are you freaking kidding me? I'm going, Alessandro's got something to say. I guarantee it. Okay. So we're going to get that. But my thing is I'm going, you know, there is a moral compass that was already there that this stuff aligned with for you. And I'm wondering what that moral compass was. You know, how did you even recognize that? The injustice of all of this stuff. Some people, a lot of them, they just, that's the way it is, and you need me as your politician or your lawyer to walk you through this, and I'm a good guy because I know how to walk through it better and pay me. But, you know, it's really, to feel the injustice of this is something that's ingrained. Was it biological, or did somebody teach you to recognize the morality of Rothbard and where you should be? Where did that come from?
Well, I think you don't really need someone to teach you. It's part of what I call natural law, what is natural morality. And so it's not necessary to have someone teach you to see the logical beauty of the arguments of the libertarian philosophers.
Now, you would think so. But, you know, that's, you know, it's just a minimum intelligence IQ point of Alessandro knew how to spell or something. You know, we're going to find out. You speak five languages and you're an attorney in, you know, several countries throughout European Union. Then I'm thinking, You're smart enough to know better.
From the second letter of Captain Mark. Any pirate knows that commerce is communication. Markets condensed oceans of information into a single price. Innovations in communication are circumventing the scrutiny of the crown. This signals a change in the coin of the realm. The crown uses digital currency to surveil, censor, seize, and destroy wealth at will. So pirate currency must protect us from this weaponized money. We need to move funds further, faster, cheaper, and without third-party observation, basing decisions on an accelerating flow of information. So pirates require nearly instantaneous transactions with no arbitrary limits on volume or artificial influences on fees. Most importantly, a pirate currency must preclude centralization. Otherwise, it will become another link in our chain to the crown. A superior currency will result in the obsolescence of the coin of the realm and the extinction of the crown itself. Trade above the grid. Join us at PiratesWithoutBorders.com. Yeah, sorry, I had to do something. Okay, when we come back, I'm glad we got through that. I got to get the whys, man. You know, I just, you know, what the heck? So now you're from a very good perch, a good position to see, you know, in Germany, Spain, and Italy, how European Union policies affect your clients and stuff. But you're kind of, are you ready to bail yet? Are you ready to, like, you know, enjoy life and, you know, move America or some island somewhere or get the hell out of Dodge? I mean, where you at? You there? Alessandro?
Hello?
Yeah, you there?
Oh. Yeah, the line went dead for a second. Now I hear you well.
Okay, so you, well, we're coming back. Well, dang it. I'll ask you on air. I want
to
get. Hold on. I'll ask you on air. Here we go. Yep.
She gets it.
This is the Onion News Network.
To be a part of the show, call 602-264-2800. 602-264-2800. And now, Ernest Hancock.
I know you're out there. I can feel you now. I know that you're afraid. You're afraid of us. You're afraid of change. I don't know the future. I didn't come here to tell you how this is going to end. I came here to tell you how it's going to begin. I'm going to hang up this phone, and then I'm going to show these people what you don't want them to see. I'm going to show them a world without you. A world without rules and controls, without borders or boundaries. A world where anything is possible. Where we go from there is a choice I leave to you.
Oh, another Neo! Alessandro Spasillo from Italia! He's a real! You know, are you telling me I could dodge bullets? No, Alessandro. I'm saying that when the time comes, you won't have to. Real! All right. This is one thing, you know, being an attorney for, you know, at the high ends of in several countries in the European Union, and you've been warning and telling us for years, man, what's a coming? Are we there yet? Is it getting to where, you know, Italy sure as heck has something to say about this European Union thing? All right, tell me what you want Americans, we should all know, and I should know, and then are you ready? I want to get, before we end the show, are you ready to leave yet, man? I mean, Arizona be nice. You know, so, all right, tell me what's going on, Italy. What do you think the future is, and Brexit and everything? Go.
Okay, I think we are living a very, very interesting time in Europe now. The European Union is on the verge of a very big crisis. We have different things going on. On one side, there's Brexit. British Prime Minister Theresa May struck a deal with the European Union which doesn't satisfy the so-called hard Brexiters, and more or less she agreed to exit the European Union but to remain for at least until 2020 or even longer, as far as the basic rules are concerned about the border controls and the movement of capitals and of goods. So Great Britain has lots of problems with Brexit, which doesn't satisfy the hard Brexiters. Further, the Spanish may put their veto on the agreement that was cut by the European Union
veto.
And Great Britain. Yeah, because they don't like the idea to have a border in Gibraltar in Spain, and so this may turn out as a major problem for Brexit, which no one ever considered.
Okay, wait. The borders in Spain, Brexit, what? What are you talking about?
Yes, Gibraltar is a little British enclave in Spain, in southern Spain, right in front of Morocco, and it has been British possession for hundreds of years. And up to now, due to the fact that Great Britain is part of the European Union, it had no border to Spain. So there are, in fact, lots of workers who cross the border to what is part of the British territory every day, coming from Spain to work in Gibraltar.
Okay, now wait a minute. You said there is a line, there's a border, a recognized line. There's just not a wall or something.
Yes, there's a border, and it used to be an open border because it didn't have a real border, a hard border. And with Brexit, there's the actual threat that there will be border controls on the within Spain on the border with Gibraltar. So this could turn out to be a big problem for Brexit, because Spain threatened the European Union to veto the agreement. So this is another problem.
You know, this is let me tell you what my big problem is that there's somebody can veto my declaration of I'm not with you guys anymore. You know, Brexit just goes, you know what? We voted and we're done. They go, now we're going to veto your vote. Where the hell did that come from?
It's not so much that Spain can veto Brexit, but Spain can veto the agreement which the European Union wants to make with Great Britain.
Well, why is Great Britain negotiating any kind of an agreement? Why aren't they? We're Brexit and we're done.
That's the great question, because and this is what the so-called hard Brexiters are saying. We don't need any agreement at all, so we are out and that's it. And,
boom, done.
That's it, exactly. I think this is the most sensible position. This will produce a certain amount of problems because of the border controls, of customs, and so on. But it's the best solution for Great Britain. Especially, it is the solution which is most respectful of the Brexit vote, because what the British voters said is we want to be out of the European Union, and to say, yes, we are out, but we remain at least until 2020 or probably even longer. It seems like a little bit of a practical joke to the voters, which in fact it is.
Okay, so now we're looking at what does Italy call their exit? You know, Italexic? I mean, what do they call it?
Yeah, they're calling it Italexit. And
oh really?
In Italy, that's the common expression which is coming out. It's Italexit.
Okay, so what has brought that? I tell you, the thing that stuck in my mind more than anything else of all the stuff that went on was when Italy was bringing in all of the immigrants and forcing housing and multiple housing and hotel owners and retired guys with bed and breakfasts to take, you know, these immigrants and forcing them to house them. And that right there, I'm going, man, we are so done. If I was one of them, I go, no, you don't get to have some super over me tell me I got from a foreign Brussels something. No, hell no, we're done. So what was it that got the Italian people to make that idea, that concept of we want to be out of the union? Was it that or other things or accumulative? What were the issues?
Well, I think there are lots of different issues. The migration problem is one of the issues and probably is one of the biggest issues. Italy feels that the European Union is not keeping up its promises regarding migrants. The Dublin Treaty basically says there are certain countries, like especially Italy and Greece, which are external borders of the European Union. So the only way is to get the migrants through these borders, the Italian borders and the Greek borders, but then there will be a sort of agreement to reabsorb the migrants in the other countries. This did not happen, and basically these people either stay in Italy or try to get illegally to France, to Germany.
All right, more with Alessandro when we come back.
Tyrants have...
Yeah, you know, we had to go to a hard break. Okay, now the when you say the frontier of the European Union is Greece and Italy, and I'm going, God, you know, probably what percentage of the European Union by number of countries have a coastal border? I mean, it's got to be at least 70% or something, doesn't it? 80, you know, of the countries have some kind of border with the ocean.
Yes, most countries have an access to the sea, except the central European countries like Austria, the Czech Republic, Slovakia, and so on. But the other countries have more or less big coastlines. The problem is the migrants come in only from Africa, and so the only options basically are Greece or Italy, and to a minor part, Spain, because Spain always had a very hard policy on migrants, meaning that the Spanish Coast Guard used to shoot on the migrant boats, and so that's...
they'd rather not go to Spain.
Yeah, they are looking for other places to go. And plus, Spain has an agreement with Morocco, so usually the migrants who come in illegally in Spain are referred to Morocco, which relocates them to their home countries. So Spain has always managed migration problems in a very smart way.
So Spain is like, but they're signing on with the European Union policy of, damn it, you have to let them in if you're Greece or Italy. We're not going to, but you got to.
Yeah, basically that's the problem. And the other part of the problem is that the agreement about relocation of the migrants is not held up by the other countries, partly because they got their own share of migrants coming in from other routes. For example, Germany in 2015, 2014 opened up the borders to the migrants coming in from Syria, and Germany did it on its own without consulting with the other European Union members, and now Germany says we have enough migrants, we can take other ones, and other countries like France or Spain simply don't want to take in migrants, and Poland, Austria, the Czech Republic, and so on, they are against getting in migrants.
Well, who is it that's, you know, driving? There's something behind. I mean, of course, we can go with all the, you know, the evil, whatever, secret handshake club of whoever the hell's doing this, Soros, whatever, and saying the policy of the European Union is you have to, and Greece and Italy, you're on the front lines and get over it, and then they never go past it. I don't understand who is, after a while, the Italian people got to be going, they're liars. This is not working. We're bearing the brunt of this. And but then they try and say they're bad guys because they don't want to have all these immigrants that the European Union are making them take. And then when they got to do some kind of budgetary thing or change and you're not allowed, and whether they should or shouldn't is not even the point. They're not allowed by a central plan of, this has got to be, you know, plucking all your libertarian strings here, man. I mean, damn.
Yes, the people are fed up with the European Union.
All right, here we're coming back. Let's talk about it. Here we go.
Airsociety.com.
Love what we do? Please help support our international satellite channels at patreon.lrn.fm. That's patreon.lrn.fm.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
William Wallace, you stand in taint of high treason.
Against whom?
Against your king. Have you anything to say?
Never in my whole life did I swear allegiance to him.
It matters not. He is your king. Confess, and you may receive a quick death. Deny, and you must be purified by pain. Do you confess? Do you confess? Then on the morrow you shall receive your purification.
Yeah, you might as well just have, the king, the crown, the church. It'll be the European Union, and William Wallace is like Italy. I mean, they're going, it matters not. He is your king. Get over it. So I'm just like, oh, man, this is not good. Not good, not good, not good. Well, sooner or later, they're just going to, screw you. And Italy has got a long heritage and history of a lot of, I can imagine, a bunch of memes coming out, a lot of graphics, a lot of references to, heroes of old and kind of, we're going to kick ass and you really want to piss off Rome? You really want to piss off Italy? Europeans, you guys have no, so tell me, what's the, kind of the campaigning? You have a lot of the elections in Europe are getting way more populist and nationalist, and they're like, we don't want any of this collective kind of thing, but they're collectivist countries. But they're kind of doing this national identity thing. Are they, can they mesh? Are they starting to realize that they need to be more like Alessandro and go all libertarian or what?
Here I'm very doubtful. I think people don't even appreciate freedom anymore. But there's a feeling about the economic and social oppression that comes from the European Union. And there may be a glimmer of hope because people are seeing how this big empire, which is the European Union, is encroaching their personal freedoms more and more.
And they want an army!
Yeah, they want an army now. Yeah, this is the new project of Ms. Merkel and Mr. Macron, who, regardless of the very, very huge problems in their own countries, now think that they could solve their problems by establishing a European Union army, which in fact is a German and French army. But I'm very doubtful that they can manage to do it. Next spring, we will have European elections, and the most reasonable forecast is that the so-called populists will gain a huge victory, and that the balance inside the European Union will shift in favor of people who have completely different projects as far as the European Union is concerned, and maybe projects which are more consistent with the original project, which was just a space of free trade and free movement of the people and of the capitals, which would be, of course, a very good project, but we ended up with a huge bureaucracy, a kind of European Soviet Union, which is what we have now with the European
Union. And the difference here in America is what? I mean, it's the same thing. It's just like Arizona and North Carolina. Might as well just be, Spain and Italy, going to, the Washington and arguing over how they're going to get ruled. I mean, how about not be ruled? You used to be a sovereign nation, I guess you could have like a treaty or European Union deal of we don't have borders or passports or something. That happened before the European Union. I remember in like 90 or so where they brought down the travel restrictions, a lot of trade stuff, and they didn't have a European Union. What was the advantage of doing that? You got a mess now.
Yeah, I think the what is going on in the European Union, in a way, is the same thing that happened in the United States. You can imagine the European Union at the central bureaucracy, like the federal structures in the United States, and the struggle of the member states to be more autonomous or to break free, like Great Britain, is more or less the same thing which happened in the American Civil War. Luckily, it's not so bloody as it was in the United States, but it's the same evolution. It's a big centralized continental state against smaller states which try to be independent, and even secessionist and independentist movements, which we shouldn't forget in the general European picture, like Veneto in Italy or Catalonia in Spain, which still remain a problem because they don't want to be even part of their own nation states. So this is another point of crisis in Europe.
Well, where do you think this is going, and how? See, a lot of this stuff, they always go, well, it takes time. Took time to get here. Takes time to get out. Takes time. I'm going, yeah, it doesn't happen all at once. I mean, you see all these changes, but it does happen overnight. All of a sudden, you wake up Monday, and there are people in the streets, and then we're done. You know, so I'm wondering, is it building up to that? Are we getting, you have to go through one European Union election more before the people just say hell no and you kick out your own guys? I mean, what's the stability of the government in Italy? You know, how are they faring? Which side are they taking?
Well, the current government in Italy seems to be stable, but it isn't stable really, because it's composed of two parties which have struck a deal as far as what they want to do, united in the government, but which are very, very different. The constituency of the two parties, the Five Star Movement and the Lega, the Northern Party, is completely different. The Five Star Movement has lots of voters in southern Italy who are motivated by a sort of entitlement mentality. They want to get more money from the state. They are waiting for the basic income, which the Five Star Movement promised to them. They are, let's say, basically leftist-oriented. The Northern Party, Salvini, the Lega, they are more entrepreneurs. They expect to get economic freedom from the government. They expect it, which they won't get probably, a strong reduction in taxes and a tax pardon, which was part of the program of the Lega. But it's not going to happen, because the two programs are impossible to make consistent. So you cannot promise on one side universal basic income and on the other side tax cuts. And this is one of the reasons for the big quarrel with the European Union, because Italy's budget law provides 2.4 deficit, yearly deficit, and this is based on a forecast of the GDP increasing 1.5% next year, which is a wild prediction. It won't happen. And that's what the European Union is saying. It's saying you cannot print all this money, you cannot rely on further debt, because Italy is already drowning in debt, and that's why they don't want to accept Italy's budget law. In fact, today, the European Union said that it didn't accept the proposed budget, and it's going to open up a procedure for a violation of the budget regulations against Italy.
Yeah, why does a country's budget have anything to do with the European Union? Is it backed up somehow by a European Central Bank thing, or how did the Italy's budget get integrated into European Union?
Well, European countries don't have budgetary sovereignty anymore.
The crown casts the world in shadow.
All right, we'll be right back.
Be our guiding light. Cowards clamor for security from boogeymen and ghost stories. While I say these hobgoblins are imaginary, I say those they propped up as our liberators are now subsisting on our bondage. I say there is freedom in the black, and that's exactly where we intend to go. The crown banishes its own officers for exposing its crimes and tortures dissidents to the brink of madness. It dominates the globe and swallows the wealth of generations, leaving only blood and excrement. The crown calls it piracy to explore frontiers beyond its grasp. So the time has come for us to define the conduct among pirates. I say the crown has trampled our necks long enough. Need decentralized solutions to centralized problems? Looking for a community of like-minded scoundrels? Or just want some swag to let the crown know what you think of it? Join the conversation at piratswithoutborders.com. We won't be hard to find. Okay, yeah, finish up on that real quick. How is it that, what was the agreement in the European Union to where they get to approve or disapprove of, you know, other countries' budgets? Where did that come in? Is it some, initially they guarantee, I don't understand. How did that happen?
Well, it has a sort of historical evolution. Very shortly, when the European Union was founded in 1957, the idea was just to enable people and capitals, money and goods to cross borders without any problems about customs.
Okay, what year was that done?
1957.
57, so 57.
After World War II.
All right.
During the 70s, the European Union passed a system of fixed exchange rates between the different currencies of the European Union, which was the precursor to the euro, to the establishment of a single currency. This system proved not to be working, especially because there were countries like especially Italy and other southern European countries who used the printing presses of their central banks way more than other countries, and so the fixed exchange rates between the currencies weren't possibly upheld. In 1992, there was a big crisis regarding the lira and the British pound, who were under attack, so-called, because some speculators, among them Mr. Soros, brought them down because they were overvalued in comparison to their actual value in the fixed exchange rate system. With the end of the Berlin Wall and the reunification of Germany, the project of a single European currency took off, and the idea which lies behind a treaty which was signed in Maastricht was that with the new currency, all European countries had to conform to certain rules regarding their budgets, especially rules regarding the overall stock of public debt, which should not exceed 60% of the yearly GDP, and the deficit, the annual budgetary deficit, which should not exceed 3% of the GDP.
We'll sum this up when we come back. Here we go.
Roads? It's the Ernest Hancock Show. Where we're going, there aren't any roads. Everybody wants to
rule the world. Yeah, maybe not everybody wants to rule the world, but freaking there's somebody wants to. You know, this one, Alessandro is telling me, I'm going, how did the budgets get, you know, so intertwined with European Union and central banking of the whatever? And to sum it up real quick, in 57, they decided that they're going to have some kind of an agreement in European Union to lock, you know, the exchange rates between different currencies. You got the, you know, the franc, the lira, the pound, the whatever, got it set. Well, quickly, a lot of countries realized, Well, we can just print us a bunch of money, and it'll be worth more. Here comes the speculators. Okay, I'm going to speculate on this. You inflate over here. It's worth this over here. I get this cheap. I trade it over here. And then, you know, who are the guys come take advantage of that? Mr. Soros. And he goes, thank you very much. I can make all kinds of money doing this, you dummies. Well, they did. Crap happened. Now they come in, and it's like, you had to know that this was going to happen. I mean, there's somebody who can do math. So then they go, we're going to go ahead and make this euro thing. Years go by. And what they do is that we'll just have one currency, but to make this work, that means that each country, you can't go in debt or have deficits more than and a percentage of, and we rule your budget of, you're not allowed. How far off am I, Alessandro? Close enough?
That's exactly how it worked. Plus, in recent years, after the 2008 crisis, when the states had to rush in to save the banking system and they had to expand their debts enormously, this created a crisis on the public debt. So on one side, the European Central Bank stepped in, buying huge amounts of debts of countries which had great difficulties like Greece or Italy and so on. But on the other side, the European Union passed another agreement, which is called the Fiscal Compact, which basically enforces the rules about the deficit and the stock of public debt even stronger. And
with what? Tanks? How does it enforce it?
It enforces, well, this is one of the problems, because it enforces it on paper, but practically it never happens. So what usually goes on is the countries present their budget laws to the European Union,
God,
which has to approve these budget laws.
Wow.
Usually it does.
I don't even think it's that bad in America. I mean, I don't think that Washington's going to Arizona and saying your budget has to be something. I mean, this is okay. Let's just skip to the end. This is unsustainable. So what's going to happen?
It is. So Italy is the first case. So what happened is the European Union rejected Italy's budget law and said it doesn't conform to the rules. Italy said, well, we don't care. We are a sovereign country, and we don't care about the rules. And we want to go ahead with our program. You may like it or not, but we are going to go ahead.
Well, they have to go back to the lira then, right?
This is not automatically like this. So what will happen is the European Union will open up a procedure for budgetary infraction against Italy. The sanctions which are provided basically are fees, fines to be paid by the country, which is Italy. This procedure is arguably very long, so it won't start before February or March, and probably it won't end before the next European elections. Now, the wager of the Italian parties in the government is that the next election, the European election, will bring the populists in power. And so this whole system of the budgetary restrictions will be changed by the European Union. And the infraction procedure will end up before it comes to actual fines imposed on Italy.
Okay.
So this is what they are betting on.
Okay, this is what I'm betting on. They're going to do the same thing. Italy's going to do the same thing that a group of people in Italy are waiting on, universal basic income. They're going to go, you know what? This is kind of, we need, you know, we brought in a lot of the immigrants. We got these, you know what? We need a universal basic income of all of Europe to all the countries. And thanks for playing Germany. You got all the money. It's ours now. I mean, you know, it's just going to be more and more collectivism, more and more redistribution of wealth, more and more redistribution of whatever the mandates and the justification of what you did to Greece and Italy and blah, 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 blah. That just freaking dissolve. Go back to what I'm. Why are you still there? I mean, come on, man. Escape, my brother.
That's a good idea. I think one of the most likely scenarios in the next years is probably not an Italian exit, but a German exit, a Dexit, like they call it, because probably the ones who won't have any interest anymore in remaining in the European Unions are the Germans themselves. So it is even conceivable that the euro breaks up in two currencies, a sort of superior euro, which will be the currency of Germany, Netherlands, Finland, Denmark, and those richer countries or countries which have a greater budgetary stability. And then there will be a lower euro for Italy, France, Spain, Greece, and so on. This is a possible solution for the whole mess.
Well, Germany, right now, Deutsche Bank has got all kinds of money laundering problems and bad PR of them doing whatever they want to do anyway. So this is, I mean, behind the scenes, there's bad guys being bad. This is not meant to be sustainable. There's something else going on. It's just, they're just picking at the whale carcass, just a bunch of sharks until there's nothing left anymore. Who's behind, who's going to benefit in the end of all this?
Well, as usual, in spite of there being some differences of opinion, it's just a bunch of inflationists. So the question is who inflates more and who inflates faster. And who is benefiting right now from these policies are the money printers. So basically the central banks and the big banks who are the direct recipients of the new printed money, the states, which got huge amounts of money by means of selling their treasury bills, their public debt bonds, and who takes the downside of the whole thing is the common people, as usual. Inflation doesn't show usually on the hello, are you still there?
Yeah, go.
Yeah, inflation doesn't show on the consumer prices, but this is just a question of time. Once the huge amount of money that has been printed reaches the markets for the common goods, we are set for a big inflation, which we already see in the stock market, which went up so much in Europe, like in the United States, in the last years. So inflation is probably one of the things we will face in the next years.
You know, one technical thing I just made me think of this: when Trump did the repatriation of a whole bunch of money with a tax change, so that they can, you know, bring back a lot of the offshore U.S. corporation money, they come back, and then they, of course, they just take that money and start buying their own stock, so CEOs get made a bunch more bonuses and so on. They don't invest in, you know, research or development of anything or infrastructure or any of that crap, so we don't get the benefit of that. Then that money is pulled primarily, I would think, out of Europe. So when that money left, you know, what impact did that have on you guys?
Well, of course, what you see, not from the newspapers, but from the common people, is that there is no money in Europe anymore. So there is money in certain circles where money is printed, as I told you, in big banks, in big public corporations in the states, but for the rest there isn't any money left.
It's one of the problems. Okay, what's the timeline we're talking here where there's like people in the streets and inflation hits and I'm hungry? You know, how long are we looking here?
My fear is that there isn't so much time left. You see it from the huge popular support for such schemes like universal basic income. We have lots of people, millions of people living below the poverty line in Italy and in other countries. And they have no possibility of getting out of this situation.
More with Alessandro Fasilo in the after show. Go to freedomsphoenix.com. The live stream is right there. We're going to yak it a little bit more before we got to get there. The third hour, which is Dr. Judy Mikovits. I got some good information from her coming.
Join Daryl W. Perry.
Yeah, I'm sorry. You can go ahead and finish on your thought. The So here in America, you see all the signs. You know, it's like it won't happen all at once. I mean, you could see everything, the worldwide. It's just kind of this last-minute juggling of what liquidity, and then all of a sudden it's Monday, and what the hell? And I'm, you know, is it going to happen to Europe pretty much all at once? It'll be, you know, boom, there goes Italy. Boom, there goes Spain. Boom, there goes France. Boom, there goes... I mean, is it going to be a domino effect, or do you think one country is going to get hit the most first?
No, I think it's more likely that we will have a domino effect. It's and then, although no one will say it to you, lots of countries are planning their plan B. I know for sure that Germany has a very concrete plan about going back to the Deutsche Mark. One of the ministers, which is in our current government here in Italy, Professor Paolo Savona, wrote a book about Italy's Plan B, and he wrote a book how to exit the euro on Friday night, so Monday morning you will get the lira back. So there are lots of plans how to try to escape. My impression is exactly as yours. It's there are lots of people who are trying to get whatever money they can get out of the current system before it collapses.
When it collapses, are they going to transfer the debt in some way, or are they just going to repudiate everything and screw all y'all and it's done? What?
Yeah, probably the people will be hit by the debt. So one of the possible scenarios is to, if for example here in Italy, if you think of going back to the lira will lose around 40-50% in comparison to the euro, and this will erase the savings of many Italians, and this will go into paying the public debt. So it's very easy.
Oh, so they're going to do confiscations. They're going to, you know, like Cyprus haircut crap, bail-in stuff.
Yeah, that's possible, and it's even likely. There are lots of people saying it since years. Italians have too much savings because they don't pay enough taxes, and so they have to pay their public debt.
Okay, are you making an effort to... You know, I mean, have you moved your stuff around and kind of what you're willing to save in the inevitability of Alessandro and families, and Domitia, you guys are going to be fine?
Yes, and not only that, I'm trying to help my clients to save their money and stuff before the
okay. let me add a little revelation that I've had, because I cover this crypto stuff. You know what's been going on. Of all the flash and news and the big giant drop in crypto and the battle between Bitcoin Cash, whether it's going to go privacy coin or not, and they're kind of an ouch quit it, and the big whales of yelling at each other and so on, this is the bottom line that I see that's coming. They, them, those, the big giant, the central banks and all the bad guys, just like in Europe, they know it's going to go. It was just a delaying action for them to get their crap together when they had the savings and loan thing in the late 80s, early 90s. It was like a trial run for them doing what happened in 7, 8, 9. So then, you know, now, you know, the next wave is, we're going to get some, and here it goes. Because right after that, here comes the crypto. Well, the crypto, there's going to be GoldmanSucks.gov coin. They're going to come up with some crypto, and now everybody's going to have to do it. We're going to crypto because it gets programmable money, and we program it to benefit us, and you got to do it, and legal tender laws of now you got crypto. Now, they want it to where you can't, the privacy part of it, they, them, those, you know, like, and I'm starting to scratch the surface and find, I mean, you know, I'm getting all conspiratorial here. People that launder it, you know, the intelligence community, you know, they use gambling or Vegas or whatever the hell they, but we're getting such big, giant amounts of money that they need to be able to launder it with push buttons. And damn it, I don't want to have all this cash laying around that we got to launder. So crypto allows them to launder, but they don't want privacy coin because then it's people's money. They just do whatever and the math works out and kind of in the free market reigns. If they can get fiat Uncle Sam knighted from the crown on your shoulder money, that then once they run it through the crypto, then it's laundered. It's like, hey, man, we went through the program of the process of it's all laundered. So I'm of the opinion that they're using crypto to legitimize their ill-gotten, all kinds of BS, whatever the hell they're going to do, because they just put some keys and on a keyboard. Hey, man. The program did it. Go sue a computer somewhere, okay? So this is what I feel is happening. When this goes, there is going to be a crypto alternative, and it will be the central bank's crypto money of you wanted crypto, here's the crypto, and oh, by the way, it benefits us. So there will be some repudiation, some put in. There's a big, giant increase in value. It'll be fictitious or not or whatever the hell. But the entire world banking is going to go to some kind of computer-based crypto money. What they don't want, and what the big battle is going on right now, is that if the people are allowed to use this technology to have their own privacy money, I think the privacy is one thing that they don't like, of course. And they'll say, you know, you're a bunch of terrorists and you want, you know, child porn and buying atomic bombs and so on, when hell, they're the ones that do it all the time anyway. You know, so I, you know, the bad guy, I'm going, oh, God, you guys, it's this, and I can see this vehement, just they're going at this privacy thing, and I go, it's like psychological projection. They're the ones guilty. It's like Hillary Clinton telling everybody how corrupt they are or something. I mean, you know, I go, wow, I am, and I just in the last couple of days been doing interviews and doing some research and just scratching the surface. I am confident that this is what's going on, that there's going to be a collapse. It's going to go, the central banks are going to come up with a solution. It's going to be some kind of crypto thing that benefits them, and it's all going to go rushing in to the central banks of the world international settlement of we get to set the criteria and we start all over again. This is what I feel. And for that to work, they can't have people money competition. If you have a real money that is limited on what can be issued, it's a free market exchange, you have that must be killed. And that's what's going on right now. They're trying to eliminate competing currencies for the central bank to have their own crypto. You heard it here first.
That's likely, very likely. I do agree completely with this scenario. I don't like it, but it's most probable that this will happen, yeah.
I can feel it. The more I research, the more I think about it, the more I go over it, I'm going, holy crap, that's what they're going to do. Here it comes.
Yeah.
Hey, I got to get to my next guest, Alessandro. It's great. We need to just have a conversation sometime where we don't have to worry about breaks. And I want to ask you about billion. You know, we'll do a podcast. I'll just have Donna. We'll do it better, easier on your schedule. Donna will set something up in the next week or so, and no convert. We'll just yak it until we're done.
All right. That would be great. Okay.
Thanks, Alessandro.
So,
bye.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.